Good evening, Bob. Welcome back to our fifth session where we're exploring conscious mediumship. Okay, by my reckoning, it's around about 22 to 55 years since we last spoke, so I've more or less completely forgotten what we spoke about. So I was hoping that this time around we can use the Master McLuhan and Buckminster Fuller correspondence so that we can spiral back on what we've done before. We can consolidate, we can tear down what we've done, and possibly build again.
Yeah, this comes from the Department of Special Collections and University Archives, Stanford University Libraries, 557 Escondido Mall in Stanford, California, 94305.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I picked it up when I was in Stanford around late November. The call number's M1090. It's pretty much available to anybody if they want to go and pick it up. But to the best of my knowledge, this hasn't been looked at before by anybody, so we're breaking into some new ground here.
Right, and you mean nobody has looked at it?
Well, I haven't seen any... I mean, there's the odd article that treats the relationship between McLuhan and Buckminster Fuller. There's a great one by Drea Berg done in 82. There's McLuhan and Fuller, the Romantic versus the Puritan. Peter Drucker in his, what is it, Adventures of a Bystander or something like this?
Adventures of a Bystander.
He treated the two, but to the best of my knowledge, neither of those figures have really cracked into this correspondence. There's an indication that somebody might have read the odd fragment as in the published letters, but for the most part, nobody's been through this.
Good, very good.
Well, hopefully it'll bounce us off. If I think we can kick start if we just go straight into this this August the 11th, 1963 letter. It's from McLuhan to Buckminster Fuller. And
okay.
There's
just a second. Having gone through it, mine are out of order.
August 11th, 1963. Okay, it's from his address when he's in 29 Wells Hill Avenue in Toronto.
Yes. Right across the street from the late Frank Sangroni, who passed on since we last talked. Did you know that?
I knew Sangroni passed on, but I didn't know it was just across the way from him.
Yeah, oh, he grew up across the street from McLuhan, on that hill, on that street.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, while you're looking at it, I'll read the phrase that'll get us going. It's this is McLuhan here. As you know, I make bold to suggest that we may be very close indeed to a technological extension of consciousness. Consciousness is a process constituted by a ratio amongst the senses. The whole ecological idea of our time is, in effect, an extension of consciousness, however tentative. Okay, now in reply, Bucky goes back and he says on the August 25, 1963, that consciousness has always been extended by mathematics.
Dialectical position.
Well, yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting because McLuhan, I think, acknowledges that he got his idea of... the extensions of man from Buckminster Fuller, and he admitted that in his the Hall correspondence. And here we have these two people talking about extensions directly as it relates to consciousness. And there's a whole a dialogue back and forth between them that kind of touches on these things.
Yeah, do you remember in Gerald Stern's Hot and Cool, it has a series of questions by Marshall on different media, and one of the questions was, does mathematics have any content?
No, I don't remember that question.
Yeah, it's always stuck in my mind. Pretty interesting statement. You can find that in Hot and Cool, this section with a lot of McLuhan questions about the range of media. And that's in there. Does mathematics have any content? Does that mean it's a tactile medium? He definitely thought numbers were tactile. Then they were made visual and literate through the letter grinder. And then they became the bulwark for the dialectical movement after the printing press. So, number. What was that great line? Number is intoxication. That's a quote in Understanding Media, right?
Yeah, I'd have to go and search that one out.
Yeah, another one is that number was tactile, and that's why people had a lot of money. They appeared to be greedy, but they wanted to satisfy the tactile desire that was extended by money. They wanted to just keep touching it or feeling they're touching more. It's almost sexual. That's an interesting point, that that greed is a tactile response enhanced by number. So if tactility doesn't have any content, maybe that's what Marshall's getting at. So that's Marshall's side. But okay, so what are we going to – can you get a quote here by Bucky that he says something about it?
Oh, it's another thing he just said in the August 25, 1963 that consciousness is always has always been extended by mathematics.
So what would that mean? I can't seem to find that letter. I've got the August 11th where he says consciousness is a process constituted by ratio among the senses. Did you say that?
Yeah, it should be the page before. I think it is. Okay. The one immediately before.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. He says, where does he say that thing?
Right at the bottom. At the bottom.
He says, I intuit what you are writing regarding the extension of consciousness. I intuit, he says.
Yes.
But it must be remembered that consciousness has always been extended by the mathematics. That is, through conceptuality, or that is, something conceptuality extends in the invisible nucleus of the atom, etc.
Yep.
Holy shit. That is, what is that? Did you get that little indent?
Yeah, no, it's a little handwritten little note. I can't quite figure it out.
Okay, conceptuality extends in the invisible nucleus of the atom. When I begin thinking of McLuhan and Bucky Fuller, I think of what McLuhan said to me, he might have said it somewhere else, but he told me that he considered Bucky Fuller a 19th century man, and that Marshall said he and John Cage were 20th century men. So he put Bucky back in the rearview mirror. And I always remember one time in the late 70s at a seminar, McLuhan Monday Night Seminar, in the middle of discussion, Bucky Fuller came up and Eric pointed out that the Dymaxion car was rusting in some field in Texas or something. They certainly were mocking Bucky. So keep that in mind when we look at this June 71 letter about the press conference they had. And McLuhan says he's going to join the world game. Let's lead towards that because McLuhan is on the surface appearing to be a supporter of Bucky Fuller.
Yeah.
He does.
Two other letters as well where he says he loves the idea of tensegrity, and he also says to Bucky that the Dymaxion domes over the city are also a necessity. So, yeah, definitely on the surface he appears to be a full supporter.
Right. I'm just going to gather together what I remember just so we have a backlog of what McLuhan said. The next thing is, in I think Address to Vision 65, he ends that pretty glorious speech he says, I recognize Bucky Fuller in the audience. And he says, home is where you hang your hat. But he might have made a pun on it and said, home is where you hang your head. So he really in public, acknowledged Bucky as a superior being, so to speak. And do you remember that? The end of Address of Vision 65, where he really compliments Bucky Fuller. And he felt humbled that this guy was in the audience listening to him.
No, I haven't got that one. But I've got a few other bits and pieces that we can add to our inventory of bits to discuss.
Okay, well, I'll add the couple that I got in the mid-50s in one of the explorations. He talks about the Bucky Fuller dome, the little eagle. Dymaxion design is perfectly fit for the cold environment of television, like an Eskimo igloo. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
See, he's always looking at these inventors and creators and artists and politicians as extensions of the larger medium that those inventors and creators don't recognize. So he's going to talk about Bucky Fuller. He quotes Bucky Fuller early in, I think, the exploration. So he's aware of Bucky Fuller probably ahead of a lot of other people who didn't really become a major popular figure until the 60s, late 60s, say. So He was on, he knew about Baki, and he makes little passing references, uses his ideas for content. But I don't, so I'm going to look at these quotes as McLuhan is trying to draw Baki into his scene and wake Baki up. Though you don't, as some close, as his daughter told me, if Marshall's going to undermine or he has a problem with you, you're not going to know it. He's not going to tell you. You know what I mean? He's going to welcome you in, the spider to the fly, welcome the specialist, the computer to the specialist, come into my parlor. But he has a whole other gender, whole other agenda of upsetting the sensory order of the guest. You get that?
Yeah. Coming to be the guest of honor. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, so maybe what we're looking at then is the question is, is Buckminster Fuller a conscious medium of the 19th century? There's hanging out in McLuhan and W. H. Auden, The Jewel or Duet. It's edited by Robert O'Driscoll. There's McLuhan's asked to respond to Buckminster Fuller explaining how he had just completed the design of an underground theatre for Oxford. And the chairman asked McLuhan what he thinks of the underground theatre. And says, McLuhan responds, "We've just seen Apollo 14, which has some visual effects going with it. It's a new type of theatre, obviously, and there is another observable form of theatre, namely student activists, as they present themselves in new settings with new scripts, and as they call in the media, and they call in the media to assist their presentations." So this is an extended version of that riff that under Sputnik conditions we all become actors, therefore we all sort of become mediums, I guess, of that particular cultural ratio. So I guess it's conceivable that he did see Baki as this 19th century conscious medium and actor of that particular ratio.
Yeah, because he's asked about that particular design. He says nothing about it and talks about the larger theater, yeah. The obsolescence, particular kinds of theater.
Apollo 14, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what he's doing there. Well, that's a famous panel. W.H. Auden, and I've heard the audio of that. You know, that was like in February 71, McLuhan, Auden, and a bunch of other people. And the humanists thought that Auden won against McLuhan, and, you know, the poets and humanists, the POBs, and a few other perceptive people knew McLuhan probably was way beyond Auden. And, you know, I actually, the summer of 72, went to New York City. I had read a Village Voice article on where Auden lived down in the East Village. And I went around to the place where his address was because I wanted to talk to him about that encounter, which, you know, this is a year and a half later. And turned out that he'd gone back to Oxford or something for the summer, and this other poet was in there, you know, subletting, and I had a very nice meeting with him, but I never got to encounter Auden about that panel. I tried. A true archivist, I went there and tried to get the other side's view. But the back to Baki Fuller. Now, the other, what's very interesting in my own media life is my dialogues with Harold Channer. Because Harold Channer was a real devotee of Baki Fuller, but had gone and visited McLuhan and appreciated McLuhan, but he sided with Baki. And I got the pro-Baki, McLuhan not as great as Baki side from Harold. So when we always had our TV debates, we did 10 of them. It was McLuhan versus Baki Fuller, right in those TV shows done from 2000 to 2008. Now, you gave me the opportunity to give me a reason to get to the archives, and you helped me there, and you got the Baki Fuller and McLuhan correspondence that the Ottawa archives have. Remember that?
Yeah.
Now, mine's in Connecticut in storage, but do you have that one page where McLuhan critiques and lays out what Fuller doesn't understand about the tetrad or about the tetrahedral form?
No, unfortunately, I've lost it, and I think I sent it to Scott Eastham, and I didn't keep a copy for myself.
Oh, okay, so we unfortunately don't have that right now, and I don't know whenever I'll ever get it again, but it's not fair to remember, but definitely he was saying, like what you're quoting here, tensegrity, useful concept, but it's a figure for ground. So when something's useful to Marshall, it's to be used to be put into his grinder to show a larger pattern or a more perceptive pattern, you know what I mean, of what's going on. So when he compliments someone's figure, it just means, oh, I can use this. This is something that has a striking visibility as a figure. It's intriguing to people, and then I'm going to show you what it's an extension of. Right?
Yep, but there's definitely there's some competing things in here. Like we've got a McLuhan liking on the surface supporting Bucky. We've also got Harley Parker, where Harley Parker does that his review of Bucky Fuller's epic poem Intuition, and he yes. says directly that Bucky Fuller is a 20th century man. So he actually says he's up to date. But then also in the same collection of things, we've also got a letter from John Cage to Bucky Fuller. And Cage effectively says that Bucky's out of date because they're talking about structures. And so Cage has moved on to...
McLuhan. He's moved on to McLuhan.
Yeah, yeah. The rhythmic structure I used to employ in the Black Mountain days when we were together, and which has a certain character comparable to your structures, I no longer use. Indeed, my work of, say, the last 6 or 7 years is not structural at all. I mean, there is no whole divided into parts. It's all process. I simply provide materials, most of them on transparent plastic, which can be superimposed in any positions by those who are going to perform their own readings of the notations so superimposed. So he's moved into sort of the electric circuitry mode, and he's post-structure.
Yeah, he says, this is 1963. I'm pretty sure he was visiting McLuhan, corresponding, whatever, 60, 61, 62, right? So he's been, Bucky's been an important part of his John Cage's 50s life, 1950s. But now he's getting the leading edge of the 60s that's to be by luckily hanging out with McLuhan.
Well, six or seven years is before. It takes us back to sort of 1958.
Right. I think he might have discovered, I mean, Gerd Stern, in my interview with him, he gets the Project 69 in 62, 63 from Cage, indirectly from John Cage. And Cage is handing it out to select artist friends. So, see, Cage is in touch with McLuhan to the point he gets the National Educational Broadcasters Report, which comes out in 1960. He's circulating that around, which is a precursor to understanding media. So Cage got the latest. And I just want to go back. He says, I'm reading your book, Bucky, as though it were a musical treatise. And I'm putting it together with ideas of Marshall McLuhan and hope. What with my own head, to increase the usefulness generally of my own work, the objectives of which I am re-examining. So, see, he's using McLuhan to look at the old figure of Bucky Fuller. You know, he's saying that right there, I'm putting you through the filter of McLuhan.
Exactly.
And I have to re-examine what I'm doing because I've been altered by McLuhan's ideas. Back to this, I just want to finish this point. Maybe Bucky Fuller, knew Marshall's terminology. I'm not sure, because he emphasizes the conceptual to counter McLuhan's perceptual. You know, he says, there it is. Conceptuality extends in the invisible nucleus of the atom, etc. I guess that is the inventor talking. We find new material, new matter we can mutate into new forms of technology. He's not interested in making, studying the effects. Now, when cold fusion came on the scene, you can look into Bucky Fuller and see that he predicted cold fusion, and McLuhan didn't. So it's all, one can be pro-Bucky and say that McLuhan was good for analyzing the disservices of the situation and the services while waiting for cold fusion, right? So, but Bucky Fuller saw a vision that included the effects of cold fusion. And that is, something I use a lot. So I oscillate between that aspect of Bucky Fuller. You know how I say the Android meme flips back into hardware? Or it flips out of software extremis into a new hardware, and that's cold fusion, represented by the popular notion of cold fusion. Bucky Fuller is a prophet of that. So I'm not just a McLuhanite on this point. You know what I mean? And looking back these 40, 50 years... I can see Bucky's service, and that's why LaRouche in my book Fatty Communion represents the Bucky Fuller technological liberalism. LaRouche is more interesting the way he writes it, because he includes top-down conspiratorial thinking. Bucky Fuller only did that a little bit in the last years of his life with that book about the pirates of the world, the hijackers of the world, about 1980. He complained about the captains of industry were conspiratorially screwing up his world game. You know what I mean? So the fact that he got a little, quote, you could say, paranoid at the end, that justified me using LaRouche. But LaRouche gets the credit for saying, you know, cold fusion is the new environment, whole new situation.
Okay. So, like, if we're going back to that idea that consciousness is being a ratio amongst the senses, like in Pound, the Playboy of the West End World, in 68, McLuhan says that effectively equates Pound, the acoustic space of Byzantine architecture, and the work of the Buckminster Fuller. So effectively he's saying there that Bucky's sensibility is audile tactile. And so that's kind of different than LaRouche, who you've got in paired with a newspaper in your charts.
No, radio. Remember, you may not know this, every quadrant is tactile. And LaRouche is describing tactility conceptually, and I can show you the quotes.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know that unless you knew McLuhan stuff. But he's if you notice, he's oral biased toward the oral with a visual. Let me see. He has an oral ground, and he's trying to apply that, the audio tactile, to visuality or hardware aspects, whereas William Thompson has a visual ground, and he's trying to put on and adapt to the new oral tactile environment. So you pair off Thompson with LaRouche, but LaRouche is tactile on the conceptual level, like Bucky Fuller.
Yep.
See, tensegrity goes in is a kind of tactility. It's a concept of tactility.
So. Is Bucky Fuller then a medium for the essentially the radio world?
No, definitely the radio world. And then it's acoustic space and the domes. McLuhan's already able to pinpoint, put the tail on the donkey on Bucky Fuller in the early 50s when he quotes the domes as resonant with the TV era, and the content of the TV era is radio, you know, in the early 50s. So, yeah, the auditory imagination. And the thing about LaRouche and Fuller is that they don't fully feel non-conceptualized tactility. They still conceptualize tactility. That's the 19th century. See, the leading thinkers of the 19th century were groping around intuiting tactility. But the best they come up with is the audile. You know, that's the symbolists. The retrieval of oral culture in a not the oral culture like the first Romantics did, the first symbolists, the oral culture of the second symbolists, or the urban poets like the symbolists, they are the second wave of Romanticism. They bring in a chaotic element to acoustic space, to the values of oral culture. So that is their attempt to bring in the tactile, and that's represented by Stefan Mallarmé's poetry, you know, Un coup de dé, the throw of the dice.
Okay, so if Bucky is a medium then of, let's just say, radio, then is McLuhan a conscious medium insofar as he's like got a meta-awareness of the ratios, and he's got an ability to flip between the ratios, and he also exhibits awareness that he is flipping between these ratios?
Yeah, definitely. You see, on my chart, I have McLuhan. He's the only one that has tactility as a ground. Croker has tactility squared as a ground. But that's the Android Meme Replay, and I think he understands the tactile, but he's focusing on the simulation of tactility by the Android Meme. But it's a question where the true tactile can swallow the simulation of it. So McLuhan gets a special place because he explored mediumship in the cult sense. I don't know if Croker did. You know what I mean? LaRouche won't have any truck with it. Thompson explores it in depth, but he has a problem with it. McLuhan embraces all these changes like a tetrad manager more than anybody. But so that's the hint of the ultimate detachment he has and the tactile agency.
Yeah, but insofar as he's talking about Sputnik, is it actually a freedom, you know, in the sense of occupying a meta state, or is it really just he's a medium of the satellite environment? In the sense that he's the awareness of different modalities would seem to be natural under those conditions.
I would have to say he was an extension of that because he never talked about cold fusion. And he didn't talk about, and maybe he did. There's only one statement I know, I think of, in December 67, McLean's magazine. He wrote an article for Christmas, back when people liked having Christmas. And he said, the Star of Jerusalem, or whatever it is that the wise men followed, he said, someday may be man-made. So he certainly understood the science fiction extensions of technologies. You know what I mean? But I thought he'd provide an anti-environment to that. So I would have to be careful about saying he was an extension of satellite environment. I think he thought his books were an anti-environment to the satellite effect. So, but in the long run, he may have not seen the whole dynamic and ends up being an extension of the satellite. I mean, just to bring in Ion says there is no such thing as consciousness. And I think about that in relation to McLuhan, because McLuhan does use the word consciousness. Now, he may mean what Ion means, but that's just something lately I've been thinking about. The limitation of talking about consciousness, if one has a concern or care of what Ion says. But back to the extension of consciousness, I think maybe cliched archetype is an attempt to save himself from being accused of being an addendum or an extension of the satellite, an unconscious extension. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
But it's always a
question.
What?
It is always a question, though. It's, you know, to what extent did he get free of that or not?
Well, he would make interesting statements. You know, I'm not... Once, in 1975, I told him I was living off bananas. Just was eating bananas a lot. He said, oh, no, Edgar Cayce says that's bad. He quoted Edgar Cayce to me. That was a total surprise because I didn't know he even knew about that stuff, you know. And, no, he was up on what Edgar Cayce said. And this is the part that Don Thiel knew, that he and Marshall read all those occult books in the early 50s. And it was with the health food store nearby the campus, which sold health food bread, you know, nice brown bread or something. They'd go by and get their bread, but they'd leaf through all the Gurdjieff books and occult stuff. So McLuhan, as we brought that up in our first session, right, the Cosmic Consciousness Letter, something he wrote, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
And so mediumship, definitely the occult medium is one of the levels that's being targeted when he says the medium is the message. You know what I mean? That definitely you have to include that. And I'm pretty sure he tried to... He didn't mind the critic saying, quoting the last paragraph of the spoken word chapter, which I think in the paperback Understanding Media is page 81, he makes this thing about the extension of consciousness by computer. And some of the critics said, this is a statement that would make Madame Blavatsky blush or... stop. You know what I mean? I think McLuhan liked that someone noticed that he was targeting the theosophical groups that were hidden in American culture. Many of them influenced by that world and didn't tell anybody, you know? So if we accept that he's trying not to be an unconscious medium, I think he made a good a stab at not being an extension of not channeling the satellite. I mean, just the idea of using the computer. See, the computer, the way he means it, is not to be used for left hemisphere purposes, which is what he saw all around him. So how would you use the computer without using, you know, for statistics and stuff? He wanted to modulate the environments. That means he wanted to modulate the effect of the satellite. He wanted to be on an Archimedean, you know, Archimedes position, the fulcrum, off the planet where he could stand and include the effects of satellites. So, you know, you ain't going to get me saying that he... just events of that have unfolded. Maybe he did. He missed all the factors, but he made a good chance not to do, a good attempt to keep his mediumship pure.
Well, so just going back to the programming of the planet, do you think that's probably the context that he interpreted Bucky's world game?
Oh, I don't know if I finished your thought. So the computer goes around the way he wanted his computer. It goes around the satellite. He laid out once this pattern. It's TV, then computer, then satellite. But then, and that's said in the middle 60s, and then in 68 in War and Peace and Global Village, he's talking about the computer as a thermostat. I see that as the android mimic using of the computer to go around the satellite and the previous mainframe computer. You see what I'm saying? The way he envisioned, it was a juggling. It was a manipulation of all of the satellite environment and the previous computer mainframe. So when he saw that the computer is a global thermostat, not used in left hemisphere terms, that tells us something that it's not what you expect, and you're not going to get from any other computer tetrad manager. Okay, so I just want to put a reminder myself to say that. What were you just saying?
So within the context of McLuhan's bid to program the planet, do you think that's the context that he read and it, took on Bucky's world game?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's the key. In other words, and he gets at this in Take Today, you know, around page 100 or 90, where he starts talking for a couple pages on Bucky Fuller. He's making fun. There's another. There's direct literary evidence of how he makes fun of Bucky Fuller, the original Emperor Come Clown. And he talks about how the world game, he said if someone like Bucky Fuller was running it, it would probably work. He's such a wonderful human being, you know. That's what Marshall compliments him. But he says, considering human beings, their obsessions and fetishes, there's no way it would work. Now, McLuhan doesn't say it, but he's saying, I am including the fetishes and obsessions. I have the key to them, the sensory biases of each these cultures, and I would be able to handle a more up-to-date world game than Bucky Fuller would.
Yeah, on that theme of the Emperor Come Clown, it's also, I think, in the Dew Line, the University in the City, I think, where he mentions that theme. And he talks about Bucky as being both Emperor and Clown. And it's that, so he occupies those both positions. And so he's always sort of probing himself kind of thing. So Bucky's got that doubleness within himself, which may have afforded him a degree of freedom, as it were, from unconscious mediumship.
Okay. Okay, this point about Emperor is another point. Emperor Come Clown. He said Trudeau was that. Trudeau was the first political figure to do that. Now, this actually gets into the argument between Don Thiel and Marshall over Don Thiel's book, The Medium's Rearview Mirror, about Thiel saying that McLuhan's a put-on artist and a con man and a clown. And yep. McLuhan objected to that. You have to get the deeper ground of McLuhan when he saw that society was making everybody into satirists, because truth at that point could only be said satirically. That's all it was, mere satire. He was moving into a serious position. And a cyborgian, not a human being position. And so you juxtapose other thoughts here. The American worships the sense of humor as the chief feature that they recognize in a human being that allows them to get along with the person. I mean, if you don't have a sense of humor in America, among Americans, that's their core desire an image of a human being or humanity, is to have a sense of humor. And many other cultures don't have, or look like they have a sense of humor, okay? McLuhan knew that. So McLuhan wasn't a compliment that you became a clown. It was blowing both horns of your dilemma, you know? That was the issue. And there's another thought, which is going to come back to me at some point, that I want to put in there. But no, McLuhan at core is a scientist, an objective tetrad manager, a cold-hearted Dr. Strangelove. Not cold-hearted, cold-purposed Dr. Strangelove. Oh, yeah, here's the other thought. He says that the philosopher king, no matter how intelligent or whatever he is, cannot manage society the way it is, the way it was unfolding. And therefore, the only way to do it was a technical management through the global computer thermostat. And that is, that aspect of McLuhan is what some of the people notice if you read Hot and Cool. They say there's an underlying cold, icy tone to this McLuhan guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's an Eskimo. But this cold tone means that he is so removed, and this is the way he could be justified as not an unconscious medium. He definitely would say Bucky Fuller is an unconscious medium. Everybody's unconscious medium if they're an extension of some design or vision. I mean, through the vanishing point means getting to a very cold position. Now, that is McLuhan's public stance. It's not his private self. He's a very warm human being, and also eccentric and odd and different kinds of things, rude and abrupt. But technically, when you're up against the cold beginnings of the android beam, you've got to be real cold to counter it. And that's why McLuhan stays. That's why McLuhan lasts. Everybody else ends up falling into sentimentality, even Bucky Fuller in the end. They can't keep up with the cold machine, the machinic. Okay, I'll let you speak. Respond to some of the things I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I was just looking for a tetrad that I had that McLuhan did on Bucky's idea of doing more with less, but I haven't been able to find it.
Oh, yes, I know that one. The Law of Etherealization, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, I was in McLuhan's seminar in 74 and 75, and that was the first page, you know, a couple pages he handed out announcing his new discovery, the tetrad. And I remember on that page, it might have been the first tetrad. You see, you got to look at Take Today. Bucky Fuller is big. He usurps McLuhan as a public intellectual from 69 to 72. I remember Rolling Stone did an article, and he was in the popular culture. And that's what people went for. And he had an ecological stance that McLuhan didn't use, you know, an Earth Day kind of aspect. So here's McLuhan targeting Bucky Fuller with Take Today, the executive as dropout, which is what Bucky Fuller was. And so what was I saying? There was another thing. What did you just say? Because it was that's a digression.
Oh, that's what I was looking at was the
tetrad. Oh, the tetrad. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So then so the etherealization is the famous theme that Bucky Fuller developed, doing more with less. I think etherealization comes from someone else, the term itself, but I'm not sure. But Bucky Fuller definitely used it with that meaning. Okay, here it is on the first sheet he hands out that I saw. He's got that tetrad on there, the first one. He's still got Bucky Fuller in his mind, right? He's still targeting the latest figure. And here's what was great about it, is that it flipped into... I don't remember right now what enhanced, obsolescence, retreat, but what was really important...
Oh, it starts with content. Yeah, it starts with content, and it flips into figure becomes ground.
Yes, and what did that? What happens when the figure becomes ground? It turns into a monster merger. Do you remember that? It's the monster aspect. And that's where you come back to Zappa, whose first album, Freak Out in 66, is all about the return of the son of Monster Magnet. Now, he didn't mean it, I don't think, in his mind, unless he did. I have no proof that he meant the figure ground syndrome that McLuhan's talking about, becoming a monster magnet. But the words themselves, beyond what Zappa intended, are there. It's a great song to play off the theme that figure and ground merge under this hyper-electronic situation, this audio-tactile squared. So that figure ground merger is a monster. And that's a pretty good definition of the android meme.
Yeah. But what does that do for our understanding of conscious mediumship, Bob?
It makes it quite a challenge to see, to figure out. It is the question before us. How can one be a medium or even a conscious medium when the figure and ground and the figure is... human beings and the ground is technology, or vice versa. Look at page 11 of Take Today. What's it say? The message is the medium, but man is still the content, and still is in quotes as if it's stillborn, okay? Man is stillborn as content. And that gets into simulation. So machines? Also, McLuhan, I have on tape saying the figure never changes, only the ground. And if man is the figure and is still the figure, then man's a content and the ground is the extensions of man, then when they merge, you definitely got the cyborg, but you probably got a lot more than that for all the media. So what is one to... There is no human being to channel.
Yeah, definitely. I think McLuhan's pondering this issue. I was reading over today this interview.
Just before you say that, Andrew, I'm actually very right now getting inspired. We actually come back to the point of this thing, this series. This is very good that you led it this way, Andrew. We actually have come back to the question, and that's why whatever activity you do is your medium, and you're an unconscious medium, but other media will cover you, and therefore you'll appear to be conscious, even though you're just a cyborg merger of some technology in yourself. And what is the real conscious, what is the real anti-environment to that? And that's the question I've been working on. You know how McLuhan says? Remember what he says to Ezra Pound, June 22nd, 1951 letter.
Yep.
He says, back in your day, words could do things. But in my day, words are drugs. That's the problem I'm working on, right?
Yep.
Well, I start working on the monster merger of figure ground.
Because that was in relation to Cirque's problem, isn't it? Like our trouble is, you know, Cirque just turned men into swine. Our problem is
you mean Cersei.
Cersei. I don't speak Greek.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you mean C-I-R-C-E?
Yes.
Cersei. Okay. Yes, do that again. Are you quoting McLuhan? He said something about her, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's. I think it's in that same letter where he says that, Cersei turned men into swine. Our problem is pretty much the reverse, turning swines back into men.
Yes, but I would now say that the android meme turns machines into swine.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what's pointed at on the last page of War and Peace and Global Village when he says that technologies and their environments become the new animals, the outbreeders, right, eating people. And the human being becomes a microorganism, an inbreeder. Now, think of incest and what happened to the American family or whoever's family, North America, Europe. The increasing activity of incest is the inbreeding of the human form as it encounters the monster merger of figure ground. And the machines, the old machines are obsolete. They've been merged, so they become terrorists. So whatever what I'm trying to say is right there in the last page of War and Peace and Global Village. Another beautiful fucking connection by me.
Okay, so just to continue with this, I was
reading... Well, back to what you were saying.
Yeah. No, this just feeds into it, and it's where Eli Bornstein's interviewing McLuhan in The Structurist.
In The Structurist, a great interview. That's a good interview, 1966, right?
Okay, yep, and here he's talking directly about Buckminster Fuller and this problem that we've just been talking about here. Buckminster Fuller, for example, points out that the space capsule was the first completely designed man-made environment. With the space capsule, you have to design all aspects of the environment simultaneously because you have to take the planet with you. Up until now, we never knew what the planet consisted of because we never had to take it away with us. In the same way, we have only begun to think about the function and meaning of selfhood.
Yeah, it's very important to know that McLuhan got the idea of satellite turning everything into an art form, and he saw that it was an extension of the whole planet. And basically, that was Bucky Fuller's idea. I mean, Bucky Fuller might have said this extends the human terrestrial. I don't know if he ever said it extended it's the final extension. See, McLuhan takes it a bit further, right? He just makes it a little more poetic that the final extension of satellite, because it is an extension. It isn't an extension of our one of our senses, inner or outer. It's an extension of the human habitat and miniaturized. That's a really beautiful poetic extension beyond Fuller. But Fuller is the one who kind of gives him the statement, right? The statement that the whole human environment is carried into a satellite.